Free to Deviate, and I'm the host, Jim Turbert. Feel Free to Deviate is a podcast about people, their careers, and how they got to where they are today. This episode is a conversation with Rebecca Simons, whom I used to work with at Photomat. I asked her to be on the show because she is adept at finding ways to get paid while working on things that she loves to do. It's a remarkable skill, and I was hoping that she would tell me how she does it. I mean, I think she actually revealed the secret, and it's rather obvious, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You will have to listen to the entire podcast to find out the answer, but I think it's worth it. Just a note, there are a few s*** in here, and maybe an or two. It's mostly clean, but we are adults, and sometimes the bad words work their way into the conversation. We also briefly discuss the existence of sexual abuse, without graphic details. Basically, we mention it because it relates to one of Rebecca's projects. If you or someone in your vicinity are triggered by that sort of thing, you should probably skip the episode. But as I mentioned, it's not a graphic discussion. I'll drop some links to Rebecca-related media in the show notes, but two good places to start are lettersfromthepast.nl and rebeccasimons.com. And Simons is spelled like Simons, S-I-M-O-N-S. She's from Finland, so they say things differently there, differently than me. Maybe you, unless you're from Finland also. I don't think I've outlined this yet, so I'll just say that after working for the same company for 9 years, I was told I was going to lose my job due to downsizing or COVID or whatever. I wasn't alone. It wasn't like they were trying to get rid of me specifically. They told me it was going to happen, and I found that troubling, but I wasn't too worried about it because I have some valuable skills and a fair amount of experience. I figured it would take a few months to find something new, and then a few months went by, and a few more months went by, and I still haven't had any luck. I'm not freaking out about it, but there is a certain amount of stress and anxiety that weighs on my soul. It also makes me wonder why I wasn't worried in the first place. Was I kidding myself about my skills? Are they actually valuable? I think they are. But enough about me. Let's talk about Rebecca. Maybe you'll learn something, or maybe you'll just think it's a nice conversation. I invited you here today because in my eyes, you created a position that didn't previously exist or doesn't actually exist. You have passions and you made a job out of it. To me, that means that you have achieved a certain level of success. And I would like to talk to you about that. Please tell me your name and what you do, or what it is that you think you do.
Yeah. Well, I like your introduction more because every time I have to introduce myself, then I struggle because I wear a lot of hats. I guess maybe that's what you're referring to too, but I usually introduce myself as my name is Rebecca Simons and I work within photography. That's my new one. And I learned it from you guys.
I know, I remember.
No, and before that I said I'm editor, producer, curator, teacher, artist, somewhere between that or all of that, or it's too much of a mouthful. So I'm Rebecca Simons and I work in photography, but it doesn't really cover it, you know.
It doesn't, does it?
No. So I'm still looking. Maybe we will figure it out by the end of this.
I don't know that we need to figure it out. That's
okay, I have one.
Okay.
I'm Rebecca Simons and I follow my passion.
Ooh, look at you. Look at you dealing with
I took that from you now.
It's very buzzwordy, right? Yeah. I follow my passions. I'm a creator. What are some other buzzwords?
Oh.
A creator, I don't know, guru.
Do not sound pretentious.
Yeah. In order to achieve some level of success, especially people with arts backgrounds need to create a space for themselves. Mm-hmm. You work in photography, but you don't call yourself a photographer.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you don't take pictures or make pictures. So what does that mean? I work in photography.
It means that I'm working on different sides of photography, but maybe I should say photography and art then. But I went to school to become an artist slash photographer. But then I started working quite soon on the other end of photography. Are we good with the sound?
There's one adjustment I'd like to make.
Do it.
Hold that thought. So far, we're having a great time. This is going to be the best podcast ever.
Ever.
So what were you saying?
So we were talking about what does it mean to work in photography?
Yes. What does that mean? We're not even to work in photography. What does I work in photography mean? Like what does it mean to work in photography?
Yeah. It means that I work on different sides of photography. I work with photography, well, producing my own work with photography, but I also, when I work as an editor or I produce exhibitions or work with other artists, then I work sort of from the other side of the table with their photography and teaching and sometimes researching. I just feel like somehow it all leads back to photography, but I feel like I'm sort of circling around the medium somehow.
Hmm. A lot of photographers don't have those skills. You know, you might find the best photographer in the world. Every time you look at their photography, you think, wow, this is truly something special, but they don't know how to make an exhibition.
Yeah.
They don't know how to
edit their own photography.
Edit.
Yes.
A lot of photographers can't edit.
No.
And that's a pretty important skill.
Yes. But I also think that especially is a skill that someone you should do with someone else. I think I wouldn't be the best editor on my own photography either.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just need different pairs of eyes to look at your work. But I think what you're saying is that I have these different hats help me to find or sustain my work in art and photography. But I don't know how much it was so much of a conscious choice. It was more of a, shouldn't call it a safety net, but well, I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, like what is it? Would it be more successful if I would have put all my eggs in one basket, you know, and just gone for being an artist slash photographer myself? I do a lot of different things, but am I really, you know, have I gone deep enough in any of it? I always saw it, I must admit, as a weakness, like spreading it.
Okay.
But now recently I'm realizing it is a benefit, but I guess that also comes with age because you sort of need to mature and be able to deepen all those different practices somehow. And that just takes more time if you do different things than if you would focus on one thing. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense.
But I think it has to do with, for me, like when I started studying art, you know, I thought this is actually quite an interesting story, I think, because I remember clearly my father telling me, like, should you really go into art? Because, you know, how are you going to make a living and how are you going to? So I was sort of, my mind, because I'm a very stubborn person. So maybe that's sort of like what gets me where I want to go anyway. But, okay, so I thought, okay, I'm going to prove him wrong, you know, like I'm going to make it happen somehow. And the way to make it happen was not to try to sell my own art, but it was try to, you know, find different ways to working within art and sustain my practice that way. But the interesting thing is like now, like, so this was back when I started studying art, which makes me sound really old now, but it was 96. Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, 96. So I was 15 and I left home to study art. So I was determined. Nice. Yeah. And anyway, so now I'm 40. I just turned 40, which is another sort of turning point, which made me reconsider everything what success is and should be. But that's maybe another chapter.
Yeah. Could be the same one.
But anyway, so I went back to my dad and I told him this, like, you know, this was sort of my drive to find a way to sustain myself within art was because you said these words.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I didn't mean it like that.
He said, I just want you to be happy, darling.
Yeah, he said, like, I always thought you will find your way. But
yeah, yeah.
But when I started studying, I didn't start studying photography. I started studying painting. And he was just saying, like, I don't know if painting as a medium would be such a, you know, easy choice.
But probably not.
No, probably not. But regardless, you know, like how one comment can sort of totally, you know, steer you for years.
That is remarkable. And I think a lot of parents have those thoughts and questions, some more forcefully than others.
Yeah.
Before I moved to the Netherlands, I worked at a school. It was a very fancy school. The biggest major at the school was economics.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, worked in the art department. I ran the darkroom. The intro to photography class was the most popular art class in the entire art department because everybody loves the magic of the darkroom, right? The first time you go into the darkroom and you develop pictures, it's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
So everybody falls in love with it. And so many of the students, they might be econ majors, but they kind of hang out in the art department and they express their desire. It's a very common story. I have to do econ. My parents won't let me major in art.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're paying $60,000, $70,000, whatever, however much it costs per year to go to this crazy fancy school. And I suppose that gives their parents the right to say, why are you wasting your time in the art department? But
because I'm following my passion.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it's also, some of them were quite good. And, you know, some of them maybe it was nice for them, but they didn't necessarily belong in the art department. You know, it's a mixed bag.
So yeah.
You have all different kinds of people of all different kinds of levels. But it's also funny to hear what their expectations were coming from mostly affluent families. I remember speaking, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this.
Just go for it. You can always cut it out.
I was speaking with a professor about a student meeting that she had. Like, so what do you want to do when you graduate? Well, I'd really like to continue with photography, maybe go to graduate school, do this, that, or the other thing. But I'd also really like to make six figures.
Those two don't match.
Oh, you would? You would like to make six figures? Well, I'm not sure that focusing on photography is the best way to go about doing that.
No.
So, yeah, my parents didn't really vocalize.
No.
Either way, I wasn't really swayed by their wishes or thoughts. I was, of course I was. But they didn't vocalize. They didn't say, oh, you can't go this, you're not going to make a living, blah, blah, blah.
But actually, that's the best parents, no? That don't really try to steer you. Or would you have preferred that they said, we really see that you have talent and I think you should pursue this path. Or, you know, if you want to make those six figures.
I think I would have preferred a little bit more hands-on parenting.
Okay.
I don't know that I would have preferred that advice, particularly at that time. The one bit of advice that I did get is one of the schools that I applied to. My mom said, that school is for idle rich people.
And you thought?
I was like, okay. And it turns out later, I'm not going to mention the school because I don't want to offend all the poor people who went there.
The rich people.
The rich people who went there. But at a certain point, I knew a bunch of people who went there. And some of them were indeed idle rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were actually quite poor people who made the most of it and they had a really good education. The joke about this school with most people is that you can create your own major in Frisbee. Some people go there and play Frisbee. Some people go there.
And why did you want to go there?
It just sounded kind of cool. It's in a nice, beautiful location.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can create your own major.
Frisbee.
Yeah. You're
what
like,
was your major?
At this time, I didn't know what I wanted to major in. I was just going to go as a first year undecided. I wasn't actually thinking about majoring in art or photography or anything like that at the time. But after a year at a normal university education, I ran into some financial issues. I had to regroup and figure out what I wanted to go to school for. And I decided I wanted to go to film school. And then I started. When you're in high school, you go through these hoops because people tell you you need to go through these hoops. And if you do well in school or if you're considered a relatively smart person, people assume that you're going to go to college. It's just what kids at my level of education did. And I mentally was not in a position to be choosing what I wanted to do for the rest of my life then.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my problem because right now I still don't even know what I want to do for the rest of my life. I have an education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really doing anything with it. My life is my education. But that's why I want to talk to people like you who seem to have drive and ambition and passion.
Ugh, yeah.
Where did you come from?
So I don't know. I was joking about follow my passion, but I'm realizing that's maybe really what I've always been doing. Like, I just knew that I wanted to do something with art since I was like 10 years old. And I didn't know what or how, but it was just a sort of a base of like, I know I'm going to be in that world somehow.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how I've been setting my ambitions, like not really targeted, like I want to, you know, achieve this or, you know, or that I visualized how I wanted my path to be. But I set like big, vague aims, and that sort of steered me in directions. So that sounds really vague. Of course it is. But okay, so for example, okay, so my mom, she's dance teacher. So she was doing contemporary dance. So she's also a creative human being. And she inspired me, but she also worked a lot in project management. So she included me once in a multidisciplinary project, and I got to manage the fine arts part of the project. And then I felt like, hey, this is, you know, like being a project manager and maybe like working internationally, you know, like something like that. And
it's
then
a valuable
I'm like,
skill.
Yeah. And then I'm like 15 years old or something like that. But it's so, you know, so it's sort of like this vague aim on a horizon, but it doesn't really give a definitive path to something. But then, you know, I believe in that. I still believe in that, you know, because then you have like these little things in the back of your head that keeps on steering you, you know, and then you come across something else, you know, and you define a new sort of liking or maybe you notice that you're good at something, and then you add that to sort of the bucket of big aims and wishes where...
Sure.
Yeah. So something like that. And just also trying out things. I think I made up this saying, but I...
Well,
I don't
know
if it's a saying, but maybe you can tell me if it's a real saying. I kept telling myself, like, if you put on shoes too big, then your feet will grow into them. Is that a saying?
I don't think I've ever heard that.
Okay, so it is now.
That's nice.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I follow. So I always thought I make myself a little bit uncomfortable, you know, like trying to, you know, go a bit, yeah, outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And push yourself a little bit.
Sure.
Or maybe sometimes too much, but, you know, and then you'll grow into that role and then you learn from that. So sort of this eagerness to always sort of learn and move forward, I think that's just a general good drive for anything to move forward.
It's a good trait to have.
Yeah. But that being said, I think I want to like sense this 40 milestone.
Yeah.
And since Corona and I had a personal crash.
Crash, yes.
A crash. So like, what is overspun? Like burnout symptoms. And this made me, force me to also really reconsider a lot of things, what I considered success to be and what I wanted to do in life and et cetera. So now the healthier saying for me is, I don't want to make it comfortable shoes because that sounds old, but like wear the shoes you like and you will be happy. I like that more now because it's less sort of trying to achieve something or pushing yourself too much.
I can relate to that. You know, I'm in the middle of a job search and it's not going well.
Mm.
I'm very undesirable.
Okay. Yeah. Because you're a white man.
Yeah, well, the middle-aged white man is probably the most oppressed group on the planet.
Yeah, I know. It's
that's a joke. That's a joke. No, I just think that it's a hard time to look for a job. Mm. And as a non-native speaker in a Dutch market, it makes it more difficult. Also, whether it's a man or a woman of a certain level of experience and age, you are at a disadvantage because people assume, one, that you are unwilling to do something that is below your experience level because once something more interesting comes along, you will take that instead, which isn't necessarily true, by the way, if you're listening. and B, they can find a younger person to work for far less money, which is in a way is true because I am not very likely to put up with a lot of crap.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, the older you get, the less flexible in that sense.
I'm just not going to deal with your crap. I'm sure it's more difficult for other people. And fortunately, I'm in a position where I can be a little picky because there are two incomes in my household and I'm very fortunate. So I have very little to complain about. Even though the job search is going poorly, I am doing my best not to get stressed out about it and let my failure in the job search drive me crazy. I'm not going crazy. I'm not crazy.
Good to hear. I'm so convinced.
I am not crazy. Where was I going?
Yeah. So you were saying that, so you're feeling like a disadvantage that that you are at a certain age now looking for.
Sure, yeah,
paths.
I do. I think that is a disadvantage.
But maybe if you're
regard.
Going for the set jobs, but what if you create your own opportunities?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this. I understand that it's not going to be incredibly lucrative, but eventually, if enough people listen to it, I could turn it into something. So far, we're about halfway through my second one, and I don't think it's terrible. It's not the greatest piece of audio journalism ever made, but it might be.
Maybe it is.
Anyway, we're off to a good start, I think. And it's like you said about the filling the shoes. You look around you, most of the people you talk to, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Mm.
So there's absolutely no reason why any Joe off the street can't start a podcast.
No.
And or, you know, organize an exhibition or
anything.
Do whatever.
No, I naively believe in creating whatever, you know, you put your heart to, you know, it's going to happen. Like, I really believe in, like, yeah, it sounds really like the American dream. But if you set your mind to it, you can make it happen. And of course, that comes from being also a privileged white woman. You know, I know I won't become, and I don't want to become the president or whatever. But
no.
I mean, within sort of your certain range. And if you have a passion and if you follow it, you will find a way to sort of make it work. At least that's what I feel for myself. Gonna find a way to make it work. For example, now with the corona and everything, and I lost my main income.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You did? The school?
No, that's not my main income.
Oh, okay.
That was my side job. Now I have more hours there, so it's now sort of like halftime. It was our previous.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was your main jam.
It was. It was our family's main.
Oh, dude,
income.
Brutal.
Yeah. So I was sort of left with a fourth of my income or something like that. And my intention was like, shit, I really have to sort of make it work and run now to find another job to, you know, pay our expenses. But this is sort of where I made a switch for myself thinking, okay, I'm not going to do it this time because every time I do it, you know, I'm going to, you know, still push myself a little bit outside my desired path in order to make that happen. And then all my time is going to go to that. And then I don't really follow what I really want to do. So then I thought, okay, it's now or never. What do I really, really want to do, you know?
Yeah.
And then I realized creating my own work, doing my own projects, I have put that on the side since I graduated in 2002, you know? So that's 20 years. I never
It's crazy, right?
I never made it a priority. And,
no.
You know, and I'm 40, okay, but it's not too late. I can do it now, you know? So, and with the same sort of attitude, I don't know how, but I'm going to make it happen somehow, you know?
Right.
So now I'm applying for grants to support it.
Nice.
Also, I think it's not only about money. It's also, for example, that, well, the work that I'm doing, it's about related to the topic of sexual abuse and domestic violence. So I thought, okay, I just have to get to know this target group better. So now I'm doing volunteer work at FIER, which is a Dutch organization for working against domestic abuse and sexual abuse and honor violence. And I'm working with these girls, ladies at the safe house and doing creative workshops with them. And I don't know where this is going, but I just feel like if I want to work on this topic, I have to sort of, target group is such a sort of business term, but I want to know the people that I want to work for or with, you know, or I rather want to work with them than for them. Then I just believe something is going to take shape. I don't know how, but so now I'm applying for another grant to sort of support the project that I want to set up for them. So it sort of leads to new opportunities. And although I don't know yet how, and I still have to make it financially sustainable, I know it's going to happen somehow.
That's what I mean when I said following your passion.
Mm.
Maybe it's not what you thought in your head. This is my passion, the doing workshops with these women.
No.
Or doing this, that, or the other thing. But you start doing it, and now you're digging in, you're doing research,
exactly.
You're getting grants, you're doing, you know, or applying for grants, hopefully getting grants. And that's amazing. I would be like, oh, man, it's such a pain in the ass. Do I really want to do that? And that's super lame. But that's, yeah.
Yeah, but don't you think that's sort of what you're doing already? Because now you're doing this podcast and then you're talking to people.
Of.
And then one day you will talk to someone who will introduce a new idea to you that will lead you on a new path. And you know, that will motivate you enough to do it. The point where you think that is lame or I don't have the energy for it, I think that's not really what you want to do then, you know?
That's for sure. And I think that was that whole rambling mess that I said before. My whole point was that I'm trying to be more selective in what I apply for.
Exactly.
Because historically, and it goes back to my youth. My family is fairly blue collar. They own a transmission shop And my, like, my stepdad is a huge do-it-yourselfer. So, like, we very rarely hired people to do things around the house. We were, every weekend was some kind of crazy project, digging, moving wood, putting up drywall, doing all the stuff. And I hated it, but it taught me that anyone can do this work. You can do work, and you can do anything for money. and that sort of stuck in my head for better or for worse. I think when you're younger, it serves you well, because when all your friends are like, oh, I'll do a stupid job, you're like, I'll do it and I'll get paid and it'll be awesome because I'll have money.
Yeah.
But then when you're older, 35, 40, 45.
Yeah.
If you still have that mindset, you're going to end up doing something that you flipping hate.
Yeah.
And there have been so many compromises over the course of my life and career, that's in quotes, that I'd like to do something that I like.
Yes. Yeah.
It would be so much nicer.
But this is a luxury that comes with age.
Age.
Yeah. No, but that's maybe what I mean. Like, I think you can be more selective when you get older. And that's sort of what I'm trying to. So for me, like 40 was my, how old are you?
45.
Yeah. So 40 was my milestone where I had like thought, until I'm 40, I'm drawing a line sort of like a diagonal. Like, yeah, I want to, you know, I'm going to do as much as I can. And then I'm like, got to 40 and I'm like, is this really it? This is
so
all
much.
Is this all I could do before 40?
Oh,
you know,
see,
actually, no, it was more like that. And but then I had told myself when I'm 40, I can start looking for depth instead.
Yeah, sure.
So, and to look for depth, you have to make selections because you can't do everything.
No,
right?
You really can't.
Yeah.
You really can't.
So that's, I think that, but you cannot do it when you're 20. You have to build up that experience and try all these jobs and find your path. I don't think you can know your path when you're like 18.
Definitely not. I don't think anybody
Maybe
really
they
knows.
Know it's because their parents told them, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, so we are at the best age, you know?
This is the best age.
This is the turning point, man. This is where we make our dreams come true.
I can't wait. I just need a dream now.
Yeah, dream big.
I just need a dream. I want to know more about where you're coming from. So you said that your mom was a dance instructor.
Yeah, she was indeed a dance instructor. She came from Helsinki. So I'm from Finland, right? And she came from Helsinki, which is a big city in Finland. And she went to Vaasa, where I'm born, with my dad. And that is a small city in Finland. But she brought dance, contemporary dance, to that city. So within that city, she's known as the woman who brought contemporary dance there, which I think is quite amazing.
It is cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt just for one second because I want to know. I know that there's a lot of art stuff going on in that city. Was your mom part of the vanguard of people bringing art to that city? Or was it always artsy, they just didn't have avant-garde dance?
That's a good question. No, I mean, I think the contemporary art scene has taken form along those years, but I wouldn't give her credit for that whole thing. But she's...
Would she want to take credit for
no,
it?
No, I think she wants to take credit for the dance part. And now she's a yoga instructor.
Nice.
You know, also coming to her senses, no, to deepen her practice. Yeah,
that's pretty great.
Yeah, anyways, yeah, that's where I come from Vaasa. And my dad, he's a very like super practical dude. He was he's a math teacher and was a principal. He founded a couple of schools, and you know, so he's like, he's someone who's very organized and ambitious within the sort of, especially the educational systems. And
nice.
You know, so I come also from a family of educators, so it's not so weird that I'm working in education.
It sounds about right.
And I have an older sister who's a teacher, you know, so it's all like this family of teachers of different kinds.
Huh. Mm. I assume that most of the people that are going to listen to this are not going to be Europeans. Maybe they will. I don't know. I have no idea what the audience is going to be. But if they happen to be Americans, I'm guessing most of them are going to be like, Finland.
Where is that?
Is that where Björk is from? No, it's not.
Exactly. No, it's
Where Rebecca is from.
Mika Häkkinen is from. It's where Jari Litmanen is from. I don't know.
No.
I'm just mentioning sports people that I don't know. It's the land of ice hockey. I guess Americans would know.
Oh, they might know that. Mm. Well, yeah, it depends on where you're from in America.
Oh, it's where we say Santa Claus comes from.
Oh, yeah, because the North Pole.
Kind of, but we say Lapland, sort of.
Oh,
Finnish
Lapland.
Yeah,
right.
But yeah, then again, I guess that's also the American Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Okay, we can't take credits for anything. It's called the Land of a Thousand Lakes, but it's actually 100,000 lakes. It's a very beautiful country in the north, which is not officially part of Scandinavia, but the Nordic countries.
Right.
It's the only country up north that has a sort of totally different language than the other countries there.
Oh, for real? I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. I mean, it all sounds crazy to me.
Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, they all related, but Finnish is like...
Something else.
Our own, I don't know, Martian people.
That's impressive. I didn't know that. But don't you speak this? Yes. Aren't you from the Swedish part?
No, yes, exactly. So okay. I'm not that special.
But
so.
Do you speak? Do you? Can you understand?
I understand like, I don't know, like 80% of it, but okay. I speak very poorly.
Okay, so you were there and did you go to school there?
Yeah, so I went to school there, just normally, what is it called? Elementary, la-di-da school and whatever comes after that in
high school,
in Finland,
middle
high
bar school, whatever.
Yeah. And then there you can decide, in the Finnish system, you can decide when you're actually 16, but I started a year earlier because I'm born in January. Then you can decide if you want to go more to in sort of practical direction or if you want to do more general studies or whatever.
Right. That's kind of what it's like here too, isn't it?
Yes, but here it's earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. So there it's, when you're 16 and here is when you're, what is it, 12?
Oh, shit. Is it that early? It's coming up fast.
I know. I know. So that's when I decided I want to go to art school. And then you have a sort of preparatory art school, 3-year art studies where I went. And that's why I had to move because, you know, Finland is a big country and the distances are over, not compared to America, maybe. But, you know, like, well, it's relative. Europe, it's a lot of space.
Yeah.
So I moved to another small town where they had an art school to study art.
Did you meet your man friend there? Is he going to school
My
there?
Dutchman? No, I met another Dutchman, actually.
Nice. Nice.
But because we were going to Germany on a school trip and I met a Dutch guy on the boat. And then I visited him in the Netherlands. So I knew they had an arts academy up north in Groningen. And that's actually what led me there. But not him because we already broken up, but I had been in the Netherlands. And
you had a taste.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought, okay, this can be maybe my first step into the world with plans of sort of like traveling the world and seeing everything. And then, you know, I stayed in this little country. Yeah, I didn't really go because that's when I met also my current partner at the Art Academy.
In Groningen. Yeah. Well, okay. But Groningen's a pretty, especially if you're working in photography, Groningen is a great place.
It's a nice student city. Yeah, like it's a nice place to study.
And they have the Noorderlicht.
They have the Noorderlicht. Yeah, that's true. But I think for photography, I mean, I think it's better to be here or in Den Haag or in Amsterdam. Yeah. Rotterdam. Yeah, but anyways, love didn't take me to the Netherlands, but it opened a door to a place to start. Yeah.
So how big of a step from here to WordPress is that? You were involved, I mentioned WordPress because it's a relatively well-known organization and you were involved with them for quite a while.
Yeah, I worked with WordPress Photo for 7 years. But it's funny because I studied art, you know, and press photography was like for me not at all attractive. Uh-huh. I thought it was all about like aestheticizing war and everything that World Press was standing for. I thought like, oh, I don't want to be involved in that. But then when I was doing my master's in Leiden, you could do like for the whole contest, they asked students to preview all the submissions to check if they were submitted right.
Right.
And so you did that to get, you know, paid. And then I saw that they looked for intern for the education department.
Oh,
and, you know, and I like education.
I
was already working in education. So I thought, okay, I'll apply for that internship, even though I didn't really need an internship for my studies anymore. But I did that and then I got it. And that was a way for me to start there. And then I got involved in that department and I loved it because you're in the middle of this whole network with all these people and, you know, you learn so much from everyone. At the end of my internship, I had realized that they didn't have anyone doing the production. So it was always the communication department doing the books and exhibitions and things. Well, they had an exhibition department, but that was for the general exhibition.
Uh-huh.
So this was sort of where I saw an opportunity. So I went to my boss at that time and said like, hey, I think you should offer me this position.
You created a position for yourself.
I created a position for myself. I don't know if I was that cocky, but sort of like...
I think you might have been.
Maybe I was. But I think a bit more like with red cheeks and like...
What do you think, like, guys?
Maybe I could do it. And they actually accepted. So that was a really nice position to be, because I was at the end, I became like the senior producer and at the very end, I was the interim of the department. But what I did mainly was like I coordinated all the productions that we did with the education department. So that meant that we worked somewhere with an educational program, often in countries where there was not much photography education, mm-hmm. with institutes we worked in North Africa and Asia, wherever. And then what I could do is create productions with these photographers. So I created books, or I created online productions or exhibitions. And mm-hmm. It was great. It was really, really
nice. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, a good learning experience.
And for sure.
You got thrown into some cool stuff.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, to emphasize like the importance of having a network, you know, like the people you meet in 7 years in a network like that.
It's
still really great to have, you know, like, yeah. And not, now it sounds very opportunistic, but I mean, like also really, it's like really a lot of friends that came out of there, you know?
Sure. Yeah. But also, I mean, it's opportunistic. So what are you supposed to do? Like just because, like to avoid sounding opportunistic, not expand your network and like this. This global network of professionals.
No, I think you should. But when it becomes a goal in itself, you know, like there's
there's like a neediness that's involved, mm-hmm. that's unattractive. But sure, yeah. you know, if you, yeah. can, you know,
yeah,
like you said, you're friends with them. That's good.
Yes, not all of them.
Well, you're friends with some of them, every single one, buddies.
Yeah, but it helps. It helps for sure to have friends in good places.
Yeah, and then we work together.
And then we worked together, yeah.
And that was not long enough.
No.
What else about your trajectory?
Well, so in 2016, I stopped working at World Press Photo, and then I went freelance. And then I started teaching at Willem de Koning at the Academy here in Rotterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I also looked for other, more projects and jobs. But it was really nice because I got right away a nice opportunity to work as a curator for a project. And then, but why am I telling you this? Oh, yeah, because I wanted to say also Rien, who is the director of Photomat. They were collaborating with World Press Photo.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if this is how he would tell the story, but the way I tell the story is that when I was doing the evaluation of the collaboration that we had with World Press Photo, I was a bit critical about
the viewbook thing
that he was running at the time. And I remember, as I like to remember at least, he was sort of like looking at me with a smirk on his face as I was sort of criticizing a bit the tool. And then he was like, maybe I have something for you. And then we started to collaborate on this project called Transformations, or it was initiated by Viewbook. But
I have the book around here somewhere.
I coordinated that with him. And so, which was basically researching changes in photography. And it was a really nice project to work on, where we interviewed a lot of people. And it ended up in this production, which I still think is really useful and great. And
sure.
And laid a basis for a lot of the things that I'm doing now. And then he really generously just like passed over the whole transformations to me. So now like me and actually a former colleague or three former colleagues of mine are involved with it one way or another.
Oh, you're still doing it?
Well, yes, it's been like a little bit passive now, but we're now actually working together with a festival in Sweden.
Volume 2 or something?
Yeah, and we were supposed to, but now Corona killed it. But Arles at the festival this year, we were supposed to organize a seminar and keep on sort of questioning where photography is going and what does it mean. And yeah, so it's still sort of alive. But yeah, so then I was working with Rien, and then he started this new company then called Photomat together with his partner. And then they asked me if I wanted to be involved. Yeah, that's how we met.
It is.
Because you were working with them also during the Viewbook time.
I was. 9 years.
Yeah.
With the Schwachermann corporate complex.
do you want to say something about it?
Well, I'm talking to Bjorn on Friday, and I asked Rien if he would talk too, because I'm sure both of those guys have some pretty good stories to tell. And I think like it'll be interesting to have Bjorn, because I don't want all the people I talk to be art people.
Mm.
want to keep the audience as broad as possible, but and also Rin has always been art adjacent, but I think that career wise he's mostly a developer, company builder. Mm. I don't even know. Like, I'll let him tell. I'll let him decide what his title is.
Shall we? Hello, my name is Rin Swagerman. I'm a designer at heart, but I also develop businesses.
All right then. But it could. I think it'll be good. It'll be good. Or not. I mean, unless he doesn't say anything, you know, it could be, it could just be that he doesn't want to say too much about anything. I don't know. I have no idea. Before Bjorn worked for ViewBook or Photomat, he built and sold a company or two, and he has a completely different type of education and a completely different experience. So yeah, you know, that'll be good. And and also his approach to website company is completely different than basically everybody else in the company.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I'm curious to hear more about his story. I know a little bit already because, I mean, I worked with him for so long, but I mean, I don't really know the details of his old company and I don't know a lot.
Yeah.
But well, I will.
I will listen to it.
All right. Well, yeah, I have no idea when it's all going to happen, but it's going to be epic. Kids are going to be talking about it. all of the kids. Every single kid. All right. So passion-wise, I know you have an exhibition coming up. Mm. Is it an exhibition or a screening?
You know, honestly, I don't know yet.
Okay.
I know it was selected for the Helsinki Photo Festival.
And when is that?
So it's this summer in Helsinki, but which form we're going to take, I don't know yet because they're still planning the exhibition.
They just know they want you and your work.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they selected the 50 artists for the festival, and then they selected 10 sort of Nordic talent, they call it. Yes. Nice. So I'm officially a Nordic talent.
You're a Nordic talent. Congratulations.
Yeah. So that's nice. But I see it more as, I mean, regardless, it's not going to be the full project, but it's going to be more of, I guess, of a showcase of it somehow, and hopefully a platform to you know, continue reaching out with the work. But I'm also working on an exhibition in Rome, which is hopefully coming up now because it's been postponed two times due to Corona, but hopefully now it's in October planned. So we're just trying to get the last finances together. But that would be like a solo exhibition in a proper place where I can put on the whole project.
It's more your vision than it is.
And then also the whole, because I have this whole education program. I'm laughing because everything leads back to education. But yeah, I have an education program around it, so then the idea is that we would work with local partners there to set it up and to inform kids about this topic and so forth.
You mentioned before how you try things and you see what comes out of them, but I remember from a previous conversation, perhaps making that other video, because there was a lot of footage there, that you mentioned that adult children would approach you and share their experiences with you. And then that would go off and potentially lead to these educational workshops, or the Letters from the Past project was feeding the education project, it seemed. Is that a correct observation?
Yeah, sort of. Like I put up an educational program with it because I wanted to attract what I see as the right audience to there, which I see as like young adults. And so I got schools coming to my exhibition when I had it in Finland.
Yeah.
So that was the start of it. But then one of the girls who came in there, she shared, well, some shared stories, but she especially said she recognized the story of sexual abuse. She had been abused by her father during her upbringing. And she always felt misunderstood at the schools by the teachers because, you know, she acted out as, you know, and she became the bad kid, or she became the overachiever, or the good kid or whatever. But she never felt seen. So then that led us on a new path where I, together with her, figured out a program where we talk to teachers about how to see someone who has a child who has gone through trauma and how to recognize girls or guys like her. So somehow one thing leads to the next. I guess that's a pattern in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted to do this is I wanted to point out to people that you can just do something. Mm-hmm. Just do something. I was looking for inspiration for myself. I was looking to hopefully inspire others. And I think that hearing stuff like that, like that one thing leads to another, and there's little baby chain reactions, or maybe even sometimes large chain reactions. I just think it's nice for people to hear. I think
that's a really, it's a good point to make, I guess. Like you just have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And just do something. Yeah. And the starting point has to be something, I think, genuine, something that you're interested in or something.
Sincerity is important.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have to have your eyes open for where it can take you, of course. You know, because of course the girl could have come into my exhibition and I would have had a conversation with her, but I would have never acted on it. So you also have to, of course, act on opportunities that come your way. And I think another good skill to have is to make bridges to sort of see how something connects to something else. So how, you know, maybe you are doing completely different jobs. But maybe somehow they can come together and one can benefit from the other. Like, okay, so now I'm doing this voluntary work at this organization.
Yeah.
And I'm also teaching at this school. Now I just proposed today, so I don't know if it's going to happen, but that we would do a collaboration between that. Yeah. So that my students would tell the stories of, or they can, you know, help them create their creative abilities and empower them.
Use your resources, man.
Yeah. So there's always, and that really, you know, gives me like energy and sort of a kick to find these connections between things or connecting people. Like, you know, you maybe know a really good curator and you know a really good young talent somewhere and you make them meet, you know, and they will benefit from each other. And that makes me so happy, you know, if you can make people come together or projects come together or, yeah.
One last thing. I wanted to ask a little bit about, because the Letters from the Past project is deeply personal and family related. So it's not only personal for you, but it's personal for your entire family.
Mm.
How does that work? Do you ever get tired of talking about your family's dirty laundry?
Mm-hmm.
Or does your family ever get tired of it?
Mm.
Has there been pushback? Maybe just briefly explain the project.
Okay.
Or if you don't want to, what is the website?
Oh, yeah, so it's lettersfromthepast.nl. So the short story is that my grandfather sexually abused at least three of my cousins. And this is a starting point of a conversation that I had with the family. And this whole story came out because my grandfather made inappropriate comments about me, which made me go out and talk to the family, like, has he done this to you too? And that made this whole the story emerge, upon which I then started to creating work, first in the form of interviews with my family, and then I started adding sort of his archive and my own material to it. Yeah. So that's the backstory. And the question was, I think there were more hesitations in the beginning from my family, and especially when my grandfather was still alive.
Oh, yeah.
And I did tell them that I would check with them every step of the way to sort of see if they are okay.
You still cool?
Yeah. So I try to do that. And I also notice under the reactions that I get now, you know, like they also, because, you know, when they get feedback from people like that, it's been useful for them, you know, and they see sort of the use of hanging out this dirty laundry of the family. I think that also empowers them too.
So it doesn't exhaust you?
No, I mean, I wish that especially my cousins wouldn't have been in that situation, of course. I think, like, if you have this sort of personal story, I think that's something so powerful, you know, like if you can use something that is connected to yourself and share that so that other people can also feel sort of a personal connection to it, like if they have been in a similar situation. I'm not tired of it at all. I just feel like this is just getting started, you know?
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, like, it's funny to, I think it's kind of funny to drop that heavy bomb at the end of a conversation, but it's probably better for people to investigate the project on their own at the website. Letters to the past.nl.
Lettersfromthepast.nl. Yes.
And whenever I post this, I'll put the links to that in the little micro explanation video.
Yeah.
And the photo map video. And
And maybe you can also actually link to this material.
Oh, which we haven't talked about yet. No, we haven't. I forgot. I'm sorry. I totally forgot about it.
Do we still have time?
Yeah, well, sure. Why not? Just go. I mean, no rules.
Okay. Well, so I wanted to mention this, which is also one of my babies. It's a project, well, now a publication called Creativity as a Career, but it started out as a project called Ale Art, which is, I think, still a terrible title, but we didn't never found a better title, but it's like entrepreneurial
That's
learning.
That's just its name now.
Yeah, entrepreneurial learning for artists. So this started in 2007. When I just had sort of graduated from art school and realizing that there is a gap between the real world and the Safe Art Academy.
There really is.
Yeah. And trying to figure out like how to close that gap a little bit. So I set up this international European project where we worked with different schools and the kids at that school, the schools, so art academies. And together with the teachers, we created this publication. So all these teachers also have one foot in the art world as an artist. And then we interviewed a bunch of people. And so then we had one of the teachers, Rutger Middendorp, who was already starting sort of to write a book on this topic. And anyway, it's an open source. And that's why I wanted to mention it. It's an open source material. There's a website for it where you can download all this material. And it's not only a guide for artists, and it's supposed to target like any kinds of artists, so not only visual artists, but you know, there was also musicians, dancers involved in this. It's a set of cards that you can download, and these cards are, they have questions, they have assignments, and they have statements. And then there's a rule, like instructions, how you can use these cards to develop your entrepreneurial learning actually as an artist. But it's not about sort of like, how do I set up my business? It's not like that. Good. It's more like your inner entrepreneurial skills. And it starts with the question, like, what is your idea of success? To sort of step away of the Hollywood or the American idea of it and more look at like, what does success really mean for me? Does it mean maybe balancing my family with my artistic practice or and whatever it is that that's your starting point? And then you look at what are the skills, knowledge, help that I need to sort of get there. So this material is trying to help you on that path.
Awesome. So are we going to look at it? How are we? What are we going to do?
I don't know. Maybe we can do. Maybe we can do this. Like this is one of the things that I do with my students is when we start the idea of success.
Oh boy.
Then I draw a line in the classroom, and you stand all stand in the middle of the line, right? And I read out the statement, and then you choose if you're for it or against it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to stand in a line, but
do it. Do it.
We'll do something.
Okay. So then, for example, it would be, which do you prefer more, money or freedom?
Freedom.
Yeah? And then you have to motivate your choice. Why?
That's a good question. Why? I like freedom more because often money is tied to doing things that are either soul-crushing or mind-numbing. Mm-hmm. And I do not like to have my soul crushed or my mind numbed. So freedom, if it means that you receive a little bit less compensation, is worth it every time.
Yeah. And then probably, you know, someone at the other end would say, yeah, but you need money, you know.
You do. To,
and then you have really this do. Whole discussion about it. And then that hopefully, you know, helps you sort of form also your own ideas of it. Shall we try another one?
Yes, please.
Let me find one that makes sense. Okay. This is a statement. I'm not afraid of failure. You must fail in order to succeed. Mm-hmm. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm particularly skilled at failing, and I have learned very much from failing. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I don't know who would disagree. Do you disagree?
No, I don't. But I do think it's an important realization to have that failure. I do. Well, let's say I try to avoid failure a lot. Yes.
Nobody wants to fail.
No, but I think we should embrace failure
more. Yeah, totally, yeah.
Because if we don't fail, you know, that's exactly, then we get the best sort of lessons in life.
Well, there's another phrase, I don't know where I heard this, but you never want to be the smartest guy in the room because then you'll never learn anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's how you learn how to do stuff. You know, if you want to learn a new piece of software, have a project in mind, try it. First time, you're totally gonna screw it up. But then, you know.
Exactly.
And then you can do it in your sleep.
Yeah. So maybe if you don't fail, that means that you're not taking enough risks.
I would say that is true. Or you're just amazing.
You're just good at everything. So those kind of questions. And then it's like, do you think that having a second job means that you are less successful?
I don't particularly want a second job, but I, you know, whatever. Lots of people have a side hustle. I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. If you need to do it to facilitate something you truly, truly and deeply want to do, if one of these jobs or undertakings is something that gives you a true and deep fulfillment, and that, and you have to work on the weekends or at night to supplement that, technically it's a bit less freedom.
Yeah, or you buy yourself that freedom to, like, by having a second job.
Sure.
You create freedom to create whatever you want to do with the rest of the time you have.
Yeah, especially as you get older, that gets harder. You got kids, you're tired, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You just got to do what you got to do. I hate that phrase. You got to do what you got to do. You need to work out a system where you can do the things that you find fulfilling.
Yeah.
Hopefully they will reward you financially as well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, last one here then.
All right.
Do you have to have talent to be successful? Do you agree?
I don't. I just peaked the volume to the max. I don't believe that is true.
You need no talent.
I think that depending on what you consider successful, in what situation you consider it successful, there's a combination of qualities and skills that lead to success.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of leeway for this formula, but I think that it's a formula of talent, hard work, and luck.
Mm-hmm.
And they all kind of come together. And sometimes one is stronger than the other. But the examples I'll give are, I've lived in places where you could go to a bar in town and hear the best bands.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so good. Guys are going nowhere. Like, the guys have been playing their whole lives. They are masters of their instruments. They can write songs. They've got the feeling. When they sing, you believe it. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm drunk and this is a good band.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that guy's truly talented. No ambition, no luck.
Yeah.
It's going to be impossible to be successful if you don't have the drive.
Exactly.
And
but then if you take talent out of the equation, so you only have drive and...
look at pop music.
Yeah.
I'm using music as an example.
Sure.
Look at Instagram. Look at some of these photographers who have a million followers. The most boring ass photography you've ever seen in your entire life. And they post another picture of a beautiful sunset.
Yeah. But then, okay, but that leads us back to the question, what is success, right?
Exactly.
Because is success then a lot of visibility, or is it money, or is it, you know, achieving something like... Yeah.
Is the lifetime of work honing your skills and becoming a great musician success? Yeah, I guess it is.
How do you, you know, where do you define it? Is it like when you have been able to do your platinum album or whatever?
I think some people would define it as that.
Yeah.
Personally, I would say that it's that you can sustain your lifestyle and do something that you love.
See, that I like more because this is sort of my 40-year-old conclusion.
All right.
Is that success is not an end goal. It's actually enjoying the process of it. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. So this is what I'm trying to learn. This is my new path. Not always setting new goals. And when you achieve it, you have achieved a certain amount of success. But like when I know that I'm enjoying every part of that process, that's where I think I succeeded.
Okay. We're going to stop then.
Yes.
I think that's a really good place to stop.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming here.
Thanks.
And I will say once again that I admire your work ethic.
Thank you.
And I think it's super cool that you find ways to do the things that you do.
Thank you. Ah, so motivating.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye. Oh, sweet. This was fun.
That was episode 2. Thank you, Rebecca. What did I get from this episode? 1, popularity is often mistaken for success. 2, passion projects can lead you to satisfying work experiences. And 3, you cannot escape your destiny. Yeah, I know, that sounds kind of dumb. But her parents are in arts and education, and so is she, and so is her sister. I have no desire to get into the nature versus nurture argument, but I think both camps could use Rebecca as an example. It was fun talking to her, and it was good to see her again. I guess that's it for now. Thanks for listening to Feel Free to Deviate.
If you have any questions or comments, you should feel free to contact me by sending an email to mail@feelfreetodeviate.com. I've also initiated social media accounts for the show on Facebook and Instagram. I'm not huge on social media, but I guess I need to be if I want to be relevant, and I desperately want to be relevant. So follow me and engage and stuff. You think I should be on other platforms as well? Which ones? Let me know. The next episode is Bjorn. He was one of the founders and owners of the company I used to work for, and he's not an art guy. Get ready for a different sort of conversation. Thanks for listening. Bye.